This is Triathlon Therapy with your host, Danny McKenna, professional athlete and coach, Tim Reed, and...
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
Welcome back. 20-minute recap of Geelong. We've got Steve McKenna, Clint Rollings, Danny, and myself back for another well-planned episode of Triathlon Therapy. Steve, you're in your tri kit. What is going on?
I haven't got out of it yet. What day is it? Wednesday. Thought I'd celebrate like I'd won Ironman Australia again and not get out of the suit for 3 days.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're only allowed to stay in your suit when you actually get the win, Steve. So get that thing off, all right? Yeah, that's the privilege of someone who's won the race.
First, before we talk to you, Steve, about it, let's just do a quick recap on... I guess the women's race to start with, and then we can dive into your perspective from the race, because I know everyone will love the insights from inside the actual event. But the women's race was really interesting in that Lottie got off with a great swim and then led on the bike and really saw some the dynamics of the race being similar to what you often see in the men's race, where there was a pack of women working legally together behind to sort of pin her back and stay in the race. Watching the event, Steve, I mean, you would have seen the women go past. You got to give it to Lottie. It was a pretty courageous effort. And where did she finish in the end?
I think she was
third or second.
Okay.
Third.
I saw
Grace working hard on the bike.
Yeah, so it was Ellie ended up getting the win, Ellie Saldhaus, and then Grace Deck was second. But Lottie's getting closer, hey, like in terms of – she swims off the front of every race she's in, and that it's just taking him longer and longer to get to her on race day. It's really good to see. And we all love those kind of people who just kind of go from the gun, and, you know, if they get caught, awesome. If they don't, it's better. But the race dynamics in the females yet again, it's just, they're actually racing, and it's like a really solid field each time. So, yeah, it's good to see.
And I guess the conditions were really quite cold, which I think affected the race for some people straight off the bat. Like I spoke to Burks before the race and was like, cool, you're perfect conditions. And, of course, he was pretty rattled. He hates the cold. Steve, you go quite well in the cold. You weren't daunted by it. Or did it feel cold out there?
Yeah, I reckon my feet came back to me some halfway through the run. I don't mind the cold because I just know other people hate it. Like most people in this sport are from Queensland. So, I like it. I've got very English skin, so it deals well with it.
And the race split up in the swim. It was a bit of an interesting split. Talk to me about the swim and how many. It was you, Caleb. Was it only three or four of you off the start, or was it? Did it come out as a bigger bunch?
I think it was a big bunch. There was probably eight of us, and then, you know, another one or two joined, and Mike joined, but maybe if you missed that was it. And then it was just only a little bit broken up because a few of us just transitioned quicker, and we Kurt tried to break away, and I got him back, and then a few people were right behind us, and then the second bunch got back on, and it just continued like that the whole race. And it's just, I don't want to get into like we used to, just, you know, really angrily talking about particular people, you know, sitting close or just refusing to do whatever, because it's all part of the game. But sitting close isn't part of the game. So it was just the classic 70.3 issues that you get with a big group. You can't seem to break away, and when you do, you've got some theory that the technical official on the motorbike could potentially drag them back up by jumping between the two packs. So because we were just baffled, me, Mike Phillips, Kurt, and Martin Alua, we were just like, we got away on the second lap and we just couldn't understand how they got back. It's just another frustrating one like that where you just... So for me, the result might have not been any different anyway, because we... you know, the Ironman quads potentially were going to be there anyway, and I would have been fourth or fifth anyway. It might not have changed anything for me, but it just does piss me off. And instead of being pissed off, it's cool to just how we've just talked about solutions that could work when race range is not present. But it does have me thinking I really want to do races with race ranger now. And you look more at that pro series where it's filmed, because like I was less angry than in the past where you just look back and yell at them and tell them to come through. Because I get the game now. If you're going to play it, just stick to your distance. But when I get messages or videos sent to me after the race saying, oh, look at this, then it gets to you, because you're like, all right, so they're only pushing 180 watts because they're sitting that close. And then you only have to look at the tracker to know that, if you're within 1 second, I think you said, Clint. Yeah. And as you go back in that pack, it gets closer and closer on those seconds between athletes.
You can very quickly do the maths on it. Like it has speed on the tracker through that section. So if you just use that, and then you also look at how far apart they are, basically within a second, like if you're in the same second as the person in front, you're too close. And like, it shouldn't come down to that. We shouldn't be sitting there from afar looking at it and going, well, that's not fair. But I mean, did you have officials with you the whole way, Steve? And if so, were they present? Yeah.
They're great. Obviously partly volunteers, aren't they? Mostly volunteers. And they don't have eyes in the back of their head. They can't see everything. So as soon as they're, with the top three and looking at what we're doing, everyone behind is free to do what they want. And that's probably most of the race. So you can't blame a technical official. And Ironman wants a fair race too. Within their huge amount of limitations, they do what they can to make sure the men and the females have a fair race. But they have got a huge amount of limitations, like road closures, road timing, like everything. So they've got, and the technical officials do the best thing they can, do the best work they can do as well. There's no one's to blame besides, I don't know. I get it. When you play the game and you try to make the most out of, put someone on the front and just, I get that. You want to win, you have to play tactically. And obviously that's not my strong point, because there's a moral thing that I've got to stick with as well. But that's fine. But when you just like, she's not looking, I'm going to sit closer, and you get sent evidence of it, that's what you think, like, mate, it's just disrespectful. And yeah, there's no way I'm going to name names. Let's just move on from that.
My issue is, when you've got a really quite a big field and high quality field, even the issue is that 12 meters still creates such a big advantage. And we've known that for a long time. And even that extra couple of meters, if you make it 12 meters between bikes instead of 10 meters, that's shown to really, that extra meter or two really changes how much the field splits up. There was a period in Australia where it was 12 meters between bikes, and it changed the game for a little while there. It only lasted a couple of years, but, I'd love to see that. But like Clint said, I think there's a way, a much cheaper way. I'm with you, Steve. I think the TA officials don't get enough credit. I didn't realise for many years that they were not just volunteers, but many of them were paying their own way to do the races. There's a strong argument that perhaps with the money that pros are paying for a pro licence and things, potentially that some of that could be put to at least one or two officials per race that are, actually it might be a paid gig. But regardless, I don't think it's never been a great method. You hear a motorbike come up, everyone spreads out. And then if you have the motorbike riding back in the pack behind the first few riders, it just gives everyone an even bigger draft. We've had that in happen to us, Steve, where we would attack away from the field. And then, because the draft marshal would follow the second person to make sure that the second person, it would just drag the whole field with you. So that, I think that's really important, that the draft marshal needs to understand how important it is to stay behind the pack and not influence the splits, because it just keeps the group together as well. But then if you have timing mats and you have regular points where you can check, hang on, this rider's within 1 second, three timing mats in a row, and hasn't made a pass because you can have another timing mat 100 meters up the road or whatever, then that could also be a warning system similar to Race Ranger. They just get to a point and their number flashes on a screen and they got to do a penalty. I've always said penalties, I think if you bring down the penalties, I think they'll be handed out easier. But I don't know. I think there's some solutions there. I understand the frustration. I really like that you are having sleepless nights and really frustrated about it, Steve, because I think once you get to that point of apathy, that's the point where I think you've sort of lost that anger and will to win. And I certainly got to that point late in my career where I was like, oh, here we go again, another one of these days. And it's a bit of a, we just always got to push. Gradually things will change and keep pushing for the right right direction. I know certainly yeah. Certainly I think even making it 15 meters for pros, or especially, yeah, it would really pay off, and you'd see some different results out there. But at the same time, I want to say, like, you can't hate the players. Sometimes you got to hate the game and really try and push for changes there. I think, you know, Sam looked beautiful running. It was an amazing run, and he's a really nice dude. And, you know, I don't know specifics of who you think was sitting too close or not, but regardless, you know, it was a great run, and it was a pretty exciting race to watch from a spectator perspective. So
yeah, I'm not keen to name anyone anyway. I just want the same respect that I give them out there. So it's just as a whole, it's not just Australia. This is happening everywhere. People message all the time about this stuff. Like, people post about it a lot, but it's not people don't post about it enough. I don't want to go my whole career and have regrets that I just sat back and in fear that I would offend someone or take the shine off someone's win, or have it seen that I'm bitter because I've lost or something, because I actually went hard at people when I won Melbourne. So that's got nothing to do with being a sore loser. I just want a fair race in the future, because, you know, everyone's got to make money. And I get that there's desperation when you don't have the sponsors and whatnot. Like, well, I've got to do this because you're making the money, blah, or, you know, they say that about someone. I'm just going, I'm surviving race by race. And it's like, yeah, but I was there too. And I had respect for the people, and I struggled and I did the right thing. If anything, people who were more successful were sitting on me back then too. So it's like, and you know, I'm getting over the apologies after these cuts. It doesn't happen every race. It's not every time. I'm really happy after some. I'm like, oh, everyone did really, race really respectfully, like in New Zealand. If Nick held on, beat me, I would have been stoked, because he was such a good bloke and he rode like a man, in dignity intact. But when you get these messages saying, honest race, man, I wish you won, or sorry, mate, my legs weren't working.
Yeah, that's the worst. No one should be apologizing after a race going, oh, sorry, I didn't have the legs, so I had to sit too close. That's just...
I would hate that. On the podium, yeah, and you're coming up and saying, like, when you'd feel shit about your it wouldn't have the same feeling, because, you know, you feel a bit dirty and you can't even look me in the eye. I'm like, anyway, yeah, now I feel bad for saying anything, because
I never feel bad, mate. Be angry. But after the race, I did speak back and forth with the guys from Race Ranger a little bit. They're aware of it, right? Like, they understand that they can't, but they also can't be everywhere. They've got 38 races booked this year, which is huge. And I guess the next step from there, if you think 38 races is 38 weekends of the year of 52, so it's like, that's a huge schedule. So the next step for them would be to go to, I guess they'd have to have two groups that go to, you know, all the races around. And so hopefully that comes along. And then I know that some races there's been Race Ranger and people have just chosen to ignore it. So I think that maybe if they could come up with maybe like a dog collar, that when the red light goes off, the pros have to wear a dog collar, and when the red light's on for more than 20 seconds, they get zapped. I think that's probably a good move. Or the front sensor is directly connected to your front skewer, and if you're riding for longer than 30 seconds inside the red light, then your skewer gets pulled out.
You've cheated, you get money deduced from your prize money. $100 every time you've got a penalty.
That'd be pretty good, actually.
Race Ranger is obviously going to be great if it's at every race, but I don't know. I can't envisage it ever being at every race for age groupers, right? Because, you know, drafting...
Well, it doesn't... It's not going to fix the women's. The women have real big problems with age groups and in the men, dragging them along. And Lottie always pushes for a fair race. I saw her the night before the race. And they were just praying for a bloody fair race for the women again. And that distance between the top age group men and women in the pros is a big concern for her, because she gets away and she has to ride alone, whereas she always, you know, does a U-turn and sees that they're in mixing in with a few of the stronger age group men and pulling turns, and that those sensors aren't going to, or the our timing mat thing for the men, you know, if you have it in fast sections, you know what pace that we're going to be going. But if you have it at a U-turn, it's an issue. But with the women, the timing mat stuff, it could be irrelevant with the age group men mixing in.
Well, no, it wouldn't be irrelevant because you would have, if it's the same age grouper and they're within the same second of that age grouper for multiple timing
mats,
then it would flag a penalty. So you'd have, you know, have one a few hundred meters apart and then another one, you know, you could confirm it, but I know what you're saying.
So I'm thinking Race Ranger, aren't I? Race Rangers. That's actually, you know what? That's perfect.
Until Race Ranger's automatic, like, I feel like as long as it's still down to human decisions, I think that it's still not ideal. We really need, it's just a, oh, hang on, they've spent this much time in the wrong color. That's a penalty, you know, and take the human, take the motorbikes off the course. We don't need motorbikes on the course if we can help it, and then go from there. But
so I was just going to add that, Reid, you mentioned it, maybe an option, and I know lots of people have talked about this, is reducing the penalty time, right? Make it a minute or something and just hand them out, like just give them out, you know, when you should. And if you did that in age group as well, you know, maybe from bottom up, it sort of solves it as well. So
yeah, the problem I have with, I mean, the one reason I like that was because in the age group race, sometimes you just cannot get out of a pack. Like you pull back, and if you either have to drop back 50 people or go ahead at an incredible wattage to try and make it work. But yeah, it's a tough one. So yeah, I'm not sure. It's complicated, but I definitely think I can live, and this might sound a bit, I can live with it being slightly unfair for the age groupers in occasional races, you know, but when it's people who've put 6, 12, 3 months into a race prep and it's their livelihood, that's where it's really hard to swallow and watch what can happen. So, which is not saying I don't care about the age group race. I really do, but they're getting paid on Monday on their next paycheck. They're still getting paid, whereas someone might miss out on being the fittest person in the race and not getting rewarded for it. So, you know, like I thought Mike Phillips, for example, had a good race, and, you know, he was really, you know, he was pretty stoic in his post-race review, you know, turned out to be a running race, you know, a bit of a race on the run. And, but, you know, he was riding really well. And, you know, I think it's hard for someone. He's probably spent quite a lot to come over from New Zealand. There's a lot of factors there that,
I think that would have been hard for him to write. See, there's the two options. You can do that and look good for sponsors and everyone out there, or you can do what I'm doing. And it's like, well,
I think the first step is you have to take it direct to Ironman. And I used to always, you know, write a letter or email to people after the race and explain. And then after a while, if it feels like it's falling on deaf ears, then you can make a public complaint.
But yeah, I think it's like, I wish there was more of it just from a spectator point of view, and like more aggression from the pros towards it, like more rivalry, I guess. Like when, who was it? Someone wrote a rap about Sam Long and he got pretty wound up about it. Like, it's good to see a bit of like that rivalry stuff going on. And then hopefully if people get more, I shouldn't say aggressive, but more open with their thoughts about it and post-race call people out, just from a spectator view, I'd love it. But you would hope that, like, say you got on here, Steve, and you have a platform to be able to say something, and it's like, this person, pull your head in. Then maybe one of them might go, I'll just try and be a bit better next time. But I don't expect you to do that, mate.
Let's do it.
That's not.
Moving on, Steve. So from here, you'll obviously it's a tricky one doing Ironman Australia, but I think, you know, you're very fit. You know, aerobically, you were chatting to me during Geelong, but you really just said your quads were quite sore, and you know, there was a few minor issues there, changing shoes right before the race, because you actually had a lot of your equipment stolen from your garage and people might not know that. And you might have had to push forward a bit more on the saddle with different shoe height to the pedal stroke. And then obviously having an Ironman in your legs 3 weeks before. But aerobically, you seemed like you were killing it. We knew you were going to ride pretty well. Typically after an Ironman, people do. And then the run legs are a bit tender in the back half of the run. I think you're still in a good place for Port. What are the chances of you racing given the proximity to birth of your second child?
So it's the birth is meant to be 5 days before Port. So if we go early, I'll be there. If we go on time, maybe I'll be there. And if we go late, I won't be doing it. But either way, what happened on the weekend just makes me just scared to go and pick a race that doesn't have Race Ranger or isn't filmed. So because it is scary that that's your sponsorships, reputation, everything in the place that you come. And I look at Cairns now and I go, oh, maybe that's the one. But I just don't think that's likely either, because that's, 7 weeks after the birth or 6 weeks after the birth. And from my experience, that's a pretty tough time. I don't think the training will be that quality and the recovery will be crap. That's a tough year, but one of my goals this year was the baby. So that comes first, and then I'll make last minute decisions. But yeah, the family stuff, like I saw Braden Currie's post today about broken legs or something for his kid. And man, it gets so hard to get to the start line. Like Lauren got COVID on Wednesday, and I'm sleeping in hotel rooms with her every night. That was stressful. Then I crashed the car. This is leading into Geelong, by the way. Crashed the car. I had ordered some stuff that had been stolen to come to the Geelong hotel because I didn't have time to get it to my house. And we get to the Geelong hotel and find out none of it's come. So I had to buy it all again. So it's $600 pair of shoes and a power pedal. So I was like, this trip ended up costing as much as if I went to America for a race. Because I crashed, crashing the car, there was zero chance I was going to make up my, there was just so much stress. We were like, found out Lauren got COVID, my shoes hadn't arrived, and then we're just arguing, Winnie's screaming in the back, and there was this low standing retaining wall that I forgot about while we stopped to argue, and then I just drove into it.
And then people came over to check that you were all right, saw that haircut and went, he's stolen the car, and tried to
yeah. So it's been annoying since New Zealand, but I don't know, you get a lot of luck and then you get a lot of bad luck, and I've got a lot of good luck coming now, so maybe I'll whatever race I do next, might hopefully it'll be a smooth sailing.
Is Kona the big A race though, right?
Yeah, so I'm not that disappointed if that was my last race for a while now. And I just, because I've got a lot of weaknesses I want to work on still. It'd be awesome. Like I was telling myself on Sunday, unrealistically, that fuck it, I'm just going to outride them. And then I'm just going to sit on the front and then I'll outrun them anyway. And that's, you can't, now I think it feels stupid for even thinking that for a second.
You guys were away. Like, it was a tactic that could have worked out. I still think you're beating yourself up about being dumb, and I look at it as I still think it was probably your best option for the win. On another day, it might have actually worked. You guys had that nice 30-second split. I thought, oh, sweet, these guys are away. It's going to be on. But sometimes it doesn't go your way.
And maybe some kind of firepower like Nick Thompson and Burton and stuff like that, who typically would be at these races, like, throwing down, Max Watts as well. So,
Well, I Reedy, just thank you quickly, because you babysat for hours the day before the race. It was finally, my arms were about to fall off carrying Winnie around. We didn't bring a pram because we had to fit the bike and everything in the car. And it was like, I didn't think about the race until the morning of, because I was at the crash repairers and buying new shoes, changing saddle heights while you babysat Winnie and through
I actually didn't. Bianca, who works for me and is a good friend, she was there to help with all the RPG stuff. I had sweat tests to do, people to help, and I just sat there and watched her play with Winnie. So thank you.
I thought you were finally saying thank you for babysitting you through the last few years.
Yeah, no, but you did New Zealand. Reedy did you guys are really good on-site coaches. It's not just the triathlon stuff. You'll just basically offer to do any sort of chore to get your athletes to the start line. So that's good. Hopefully they will appreciate it like I do.
Thanks, Steve. I will say this from Geelong. I had one athlete who had done an amazing training block. Once again, got the recommendation from their sports dietitian to consume an insane amount of carbs where they really had to force feed themselves all day. I'm telling you, if you have to really eat when you're not hungry and continually just force food down, you're going to feel sluggish for the first half of the bike. And you might feel good later in the race, but what's the point if you're 5 minutes off the where you should be for the first 45K of the bike? So once again, I just want to reinforce that one. Like, the sports science around things is really good, but it's still just as important to talk to people who've raced for 15 to 20 years and understand what works in practice. So a lot of things that are studied are not studied when you're looking at, they're not studied very well in many cases. And also they're not necessarily comparing for Ironman or Ironman 70.3. There's always a lot of limitations. So that was one thing I took away from the weekend. I think, you know, being able to keep yourself warm is really important. So the strategies around that we've talked about before, a lot of people that we coach, we get them to cut out like a space blanket that you get at the end of races. You cut out a rectangle, stick that on your chest so that you've got your core being slightly warmed for the first portion of the bike, and then you can release it at one of the aid stations where you're allowed to discard items. Other takeaways where there was a lot of people saying they had a sore back and cramping. I think especially with that sun popping up and getting a bit in your eyes on that swim, there's a lot of back arching in the swim, and then slightly rough roads, rolling course. But you see some very aggressive positions out there, and I think if your back goes, then potentially it's more beneficial to be less aggressive and be able to hold the aero position and not get a sore back. So that was something that's took away.
That was similar to Hell of the West, some of the feedback, Reedy. I mean, that course is just you ride out of town, you lock into a position and you are just stuck there. So not so much from sighting in the water out there, but you're just locked in that position. And if you can go to Hell of the West and ride that comfortably without too much issue, then you're going to be right at nearly every other course because there's just no chance to move around and stretch.
Does the cold do that to your back as well?
Yeah, I think that's a big factor too, is everything's a bit tighter in the cold. So especially on the bike, you sort of half tensing while you shiver and then things just, yeah, it seems to play a big part for sure.
The stuff you just spoke about, Reedy, with the nutrition, is that same, that includes hydration, right? Water intake, like just because it's cold doesn't mean you should make a decision to take on less sort of thing.
I do think you can actually take on quite a bit less. So that's why, in cold races, I often get athletes to separate their hydration, like their electrolytes and calories, because you don't know how much you're going to drink. You might drink half the amount of a normal event. And so you don't need to be punching down a heap of electrolytes, but you do need to be having your calories. So, you know, in hot races where we know with accuracy what someone's sweat rate will be and how many bottles they'll drink, often we'll use a product that combines both. And in colder races, often I'll get athletes to separate because it's you can't be forcing down fluid when you're really not when you're really cold. Like, you, first of all, you're not sweating. You know, there's not the need for a ton of electrolytes. And you know, that's always the interesting thing about our sweat testing. I think 3 out of 4 athletes, we actually reduce their electrolytes that they're taking in, and one in four we're definitely increasing. But it's interesting how many people need to actually reduce and lower the concentration.
Yeah, should plug that again, because if you're going to continue doing those tests at, you know, Port Mac and Cairns and future races, we should keep letting people know.
Yeah, we will be doing it. Clint will be doing the testing down in Port because I've got some commentary duties. But, you know, we just limit the numbers to, I mean, this race I only really said to the Tri-Adelaide guys that I was doing it because I only wanted a few Need to save my energy for, I was only there from the Friday. So normally we'll get there a day earlier so we can fit it in for people. Definitely not just a sweat test. We sit down and we really work through what's been working with your nutrition, what hasn't, how do we factor in what source of sugar is better for you. You know, there's some people tolerate fructose, some don't. People with high electrolyte losses in their sweat, or sodium losses in their sweat, typically can't, if they're taking on higher electrolyte, can't take on quite as much in the way of calories. So whereas those with low sodium losses, you can tend to ramp up the calories a little bit more. We really work through a lot of things. So it's a proper discussion, and there's follow-up afterwards, and we try and dial in everyone's plans, not just for hot races, but for cool races, and get them really sorted. So yeah, it's definitely something we'll keep doing. I really enjoy doing it, and it's nice to meet other people outside RPG. Not that I don't like the RPGs, just nice to broaden the wings.
And what about after the race? Any stories, Steve? I kind of know some of the stories, but any that you want to talk about?
Thanks, guys. It's been a good one today.
Definitely not.
we'll be back in a couple of weeks to probably preview Singapore. And actually, we've got that guest lined up soon enough. So
yeah, some big guests coming. I think we should say just how well the race was run in Geelong too. You know, it's easy to blow up about the drafting. It's been a time long issue. As long as there's been triathlon, there's been issues with drafting, but doesn't mean it can't keep getting better. But in terms of how well the event was run, I just think it's a really cool race down in Geelong. I like going, logistically easy. I think the crowd's cool down there. It's just a great event and venue for the event. So thanks to Ironman. Any other comments on that, Steve?
No, after the race, I had a palmy, and the guy said, "A what?" And they call it a palmer. They call it a palmer there. And then I said, "Can I have gravy as well?" And he was like, "You want gravy on a palmy?" Palmer, he said. And I said, yes, I do. And then my sister's husband got a palmy with tomato sauce. So that's probably a better debate than what we've been talking about today. It was
palmer
weird.
Palmer or palmy is the first chat that's going up about.
And then what extra sauce do you get? Like, it's already got cheese and sauce on it.
Quality content.
We probably should have talked about that today.
I think we could.
I would have been way happier.
I think it's a palmy. And I think I would assume tomato sauce gravy over gravy.
Yeah, it's a palmer and tomato sauce. Yeah.
No, it's already got it on it. He just got additional.
Oh, yes. You've already got, yeah.
He poured it over normal.
Sean gets like ketchup on top of his palmy. And I just get gravy, which is a real pig move, but it was post race.
Yeah, no, there's no pig moves after a race.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. Well, right, thanks guys for that. Catch you next time. We'll have a full show with some of our favourite segments.
some of the fan favourites coming up. All right, guys.
All right.
See ya. Cheers. See you guys. Bye.